Hello and welcome to Volume 146 of Capital Ideas Live. In today's issue, we'll discuss managing your land remotely through game cameras. We'll talk about a federal program aimed at controlling wild hogs. We'll discuss the Becoming an Outdoor Woman program, and we'll check in on stumpage prices. This program is brought to you through the generous contribution of Forester Search, a service that makes it easier to connect landowners with consulting foresters. You can access the site through foresterssearch.com, or there's a link on this page, and you'll be given a roster of consulting foresters who can guide you through the next steps you'll face as a forest landowner. I'm Hayes Brown with the Alabama Forest Owners Association, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. Alabama's fortunate to have lots of private land where outdoor activities can take place. A state agency known as the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources has a division that focuses on wildlife and freshwater fisheries. They offer educational programs during the year, and Marianne Hudson can tell us more about them. Hello, Marianne.
Thank you for having me today. We have a lot of great programs for people who are interested in getting active in the outdoors.
Good. Well, what are the workshops that the Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries Division is offering right now?
Well, we have quite a few. One is for women specifically. It's called the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, and it's a weekend. It's from October 1st through 3rd, and it's basically a wonderful summer camp atmosphere where supportive women can get together, and you can come alone, and we'll pair you with a roommate, and learn how to shoot, learn how to drive a trailer, learn how to drive a boat, learn how to basically learn how to hunt, and all sorts of outdoor skills, driving a four-wheeler, self-defense, what you can and cannot eat in the woods, all of these things, and it's a woman's event, and this is actually our 48th one.
Oh, okay. Well, how does the workshop equip someone who attends with ideas about wildlife conservation?
Well, wildlife conservation is funded by a sportsman. Everything that the Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries Division does is funded by license sales. And so people think of us when they think of hunting, but it's actually more than just hunting that we make possible. Not just game species, but non-game species and their populations are managed using funds from license dollars, shooting sports monies that come through the form of matching funds from the federal government. So basically, if you purchase a license, you're helping support wildlife conservation in your state, whether you hunt or not. And so participants in our Becoming an Outdoors Woman program do need to have either a wildlife heritage license or a wildlife management area license in order to participate, because that's what funds our staff and that's what funds wildlife conservation nationwide, including here in Alabama.
What's on the agenda at the workshop? What will they learn?
The Becoming an Outdoors Woman agenda is basically 3 days of action-packed workshops, archery, shooting pistols, shooting rifles, self-defense, learning different frontier skills, Dutch oven cooking, how to do first aid in the woods, basic classes such as deer hunting, how to fish, how to canoe, driving a motorboat, and also a four-wheeler, backing up a trailer. Those types of things are all different classes that the women can choose from and attend these classes Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with a group of supportive, friendly faces.
I don't think you mentioned where it's going to be this year.
Oh, yes. It's going to be at the 4-H Center in Columbiana, Alabama, and this is a dormitory style overnight, and all of the meals and lodging are included in the registration fee. It's $275.
Okay.
There are people that come year after year. There's people that come and don't know a soul. Everyone is welcome. It's for females only, and it's real adult summer camp atmosphere.
Okay, and you register how?
You go to OutdoorAlabama.com and search for Becoming an Outdoors Woman, and you can register there. It's October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd this year.
All right. Thanks, Marianne. We appreciate that. Mark Ullis is with Moultrie Mobile Game Cameras. He can help us understand how these type cameras can help with remote management of land. Hello, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Many people use game cameras for game management, of course, but how can they also be used for other purposes?
Well, we have a lot of customers that use the cellular game cameras for security on remote properties. And, the two major limiting factors at most remote properties for traditional security camera type setups are a lack of internet service, and a lack of an electrical hookup. But the cellular game camera solved these two problems because they run on AA batteries and they use a cellular signal to transmit the image or video to a cloud-based server where the owner can then view it on their smartphone through the Moultrie mobile app. And this allows you to use the camera at, you know, gated entries on the property, equipment barns and sheds, cabins, houses, marinas, even RV and boat storage type facilities. And the cellular game cameras, they can also be used to monitor work being done on a remote property while you aren't there. So, you know, think in terms of logging operations and counting the numbers of fully loaded trucks exiting the property, or road maintenance projects, or building a pond. You can keep a daily tab on the progress of the work going on and know exactly when someone is there on the property or not.
Okay, you're partial to the Moultrie mobile cameras. What features do they have that can help with security specifically?
Sure. With the Moultrie mobile system specifically, each time an image is triggered and sent through the cloud to the app, it's automatically scanned with artificial intelligence. And this is looking for things like deer, turkeys, people, and vehicles. So that way, if you're using the camera for a security type setting, you can go into the settings on your app, and you can select to get notifications on your phone, for example, if a person or vehicle shows up in that image. That way, a minute or two after the image is taken and sent to the server, you would get a notification on your smartphone. You could click on it, and you could see, is that someone that needs to be on that property or not? And if they're, you know, someone that's not supposed to be there, at that point, you can contact law enforcement, a neighbor, or whatever your plan of action is. Also, Moultrie Mobile's newest cellular camera, it's called the Delta. The Delta features invisible infrared flash. So that way it can take a picture in the pitch black, but there's no visible flash that a trespasser can see. So the likelihood of them spotting the camera and tampering with it is very low, especially if that camera is placed up higher and hidden well.
Can you give us some real quick tips on extending battery life? That's one of the problems with these cameras.
Absolutely. You know, I always recommend anyone running a cell cam to go ahead and invest the extra, you know, $60, $70 in an external power source for their cellular camera. And Moultrie offers several of those. One of which comes in a weatherproof battery box. It features a 12-volt battery, and it has two solar panels built into the box itself. And this will keep the camera running for a very long time, especially if it's getting good sunlight, 6 hours, you know, at least 6 hours throughout the day. And then we have other smaller solar panel options that can be mounted discreetly with the camera that will keep that camera running for a very long time. And the other thing I always tell people is if you're running a cell cam for security, make sure to really focus it on your area of interest. So, you know, if it's a gated entrance or a barn or a building, make sure you're focused there. And also make sure it's not an area where you're going to have a lot of wildlife or horses or cattle walking in front of it. Because these cameras are motion activated, that's going to continue to, in those scenarios, you're going to get a lot of pictures, and that's going to dramatically reduce the battery life the more that's taking images. So we really recommend to fine-tune that, focus it on the area. And, you know, finally, I would say the one thing, anyone that's interested in even checking out the Moultrie mobile system, you can download the free app to your smartphone, and there's a demo option on there. And we have cameras that are located on different properties, and people can actually use the full app and get a real feel how they could use that on their property.
Okay. All right, Mark. Well, we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Vince Carter works for the Alabama Extension Service, and he can explain a new program for controlling wild hogs called the Federal Swine Control Pilot Program. Welcome, Vince.
Thank you, Hayes, for having me.
What is the Federal Swine Control Pilot Program?
So the Feral Swine Control Pilot Program was allocated through funds through the 2018 Farm Bill, and it was set up to help manage or help landowners manage for controlling feral swine in certain states. In the first round of the funding, Alabama was one of the 10 states that was selected. So there's really two parts to this program, or two main parts that really benefit landowners. The first is actually funding USDA Wildlife Service professionals that will trap on landowners' property at no cost to remove wild pigs. And especially, and this is in certain areas that are approved through the program. And then the other part of the program was also to help fund cost share on trapping equipment. So the concept of this is let the USDA Wildlife Services move through an area, remove as many pigs as possible, and then leave landowners with the tools needed to continue to help manage for feral swine on their property.
Okay. So, what counties are involved in it?
So in Alabama, they looked at focusing areas where there was a high feral swine density as well as high agricultural density. So in Alabama, the first round of funding covers Henry, Houston, Dale, Coffee, Geneva counties, and also Escambia and Sumter counties, and then Baldwin County as well, too. So there's only certain counties that are in Alabama that are covered under the program of this first round of funding.
All right. If you have land in those counties, how do you get involved in the program?
So this program is run through the Alabama Soil and Water Conservation Committee. They're the ones that are leading this along with other state partners. So if a landowner falls in this county and has a property and has a feral swine problem, then they just need to go to their local NRCS or USDA FSA service center where they'll be able to talk to an Alabama Soil and Water Conservation District representative.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Vince. We appreciate that very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Billy Rye is a returning guest. He's a consulting forester, and we asked him to tell us about the timber markets. Hello, Billy.
Hello, Hayes. How are you?
Why are stumpage prices not rising like lumber prices at the retail level?
Well, the short answer is oversupply. We planted so many pines back in the 80s and 90s relative to the current mill capacity that they can basically source all their needs even at peak demands. I did check this morning, and the lumber future prices for southern yellow pine are back down to the pre-bubble level. So everybody, I guess, knew that that was going to be a short-term influence on the lumber prices. So the good news is prices for landowners, the stumpage values are up around 20%. And I don't really see them going back down to pre-COVID levels, mainly because of the, in our area at least, because of the new mill announcements and mill expansions.
Okay. Even cardboard prices are high. Why is it still difficult, though, to get a pine thinning done?
There's a couple of reasons for that. So it's related to the first answer. There's an oversupply of pine relative to our current mill capacity that we have. So when it's dry, these mills just fill up with wood. And so obviously, since they can't move the wood, then the logger's not going to be interested in thinning your property. Well, when it's wet, we have a reverse problem. The mill needs the wood, but they give incentives to the loggers and the producers to bring them wood. And if they don't fill their quota, then they take those loads from them and give them to someone else. So therefore, they're only interested in clear cutting. So it's really a mill capacity issue, but getting pine plantations thinned is still a difficult chore in most of Alabama.
Mills that used hardwood pulpwood reduced production because of COVID, but now they've opened back up. Did that improve prices for hardwood pulpwood?
Yes. I'm going to say across the board, yes. In Alabama, you were seeing increased prices for landowners for hardwood pulpwood. In fact, the two-step they did due to COVID plus the wet weather we've had this year has got most of them a little bit worried going into this winter. And in all areas of the state, I'm hearing higher prices for hardwood pulpwood. And if you've got a track that can be harvested while it's wet, you're going to get a premium.
Okay. What's going on with hardwood sawtimber?
Hardwood sawtimber prices are great across the board. Everything's up. Red oak's up. White oak's up. White oak has historically been really good in Alabama and continues to be so. All products. Poplar's up. Cross tie material is doing really well in some portions of the state. So the general trend is up. And I called a couple of my hardwood sawmill buddies up in Tennessee, Eric Weiser and Charles Edwards today, and both of them reiterated that. The one thing the landowners need to consider when it comes to the decision when to sell timber is that most of these guys are a little nervous about next summer. They don't really know if the prices will retain, the lumber prices will be about the same or if they're going to go down. So if you've got a tract that can be harvested while it's wet, this is the time to sell.
All right. Thank you, Billy. We appreciate that. And that's all the time we have for this issue. Our thanks go to Marianne Hudson, Mark Olis, Vince Carter, and Billy Rye. The Senate passed the $1 trillion infrastructure bill this week. To the extent it actually deals with roads, bridges, and communication systems, it may have an effect on the use of wood in all of these projects. Markets are largely driven by the private sector, which drives spending on goods and services, but in this case, public spending is the driver. It's very Keynesian. Keynesian economics is often associated with governments spending their way out of a recession. We're not in a recession now, but one thing politicians of all parties seem to like is government spending on programs. If this bill progresses, it will be interesting to see how public sector spending affects the wood markets and how much additional demand will be caused by this large-scale infrastructure project. On behalf of the Alabama Forest Owners Association, I'm Hayes Brown, thanking you for joining us for this issue of Capital Ideas Live.